Entering the second mansion, we begin with the prayer of entry in abbreviated form. I cross the bridge into the silent bliss of my interior castle. I close the drawbridge and forbid all outside influences from entry into this holy place that is my soul. Here in my castle, I am alone with God. Under God's light and companionship, I discover the depth and beauty of my soul. I embrace the power of prayer. I open myself to divine guidance. I surrender myself to become as a channel for grace, healing, and service as God directs my life. You are now in your second mansion. Like so many people, you're going to wonder, what does my second mansion look like? How do I know what a mansion looks like or what a mansion feels like? Teresa was very clear that the mansions of your soul were sensations, were levels of power, were levels of consciousness, were ever-deepening states. For her, the soul was a crystal. A crystal. That is how she described it. A luminous crystal that had seven mansions. The center one was the heart. She didn't see the mansions lined up like the chakras. She didn't see them in any specific order. They were experienced as ever-increasing spheres of depth, degrees of interior perception, degrees of inner experience where she could discern, I have crossed into a deeper sphere of inner life. That is how she knew. She had made a progression, and that is her word for it, a progression into a deeper state of consciousness that she said was a mansion. And she used that because her beloved Jesus would say, there are many mansions in my Father's house. And of course, she drew the metaphor of castle because of her own beloved city, Avila, Spain, which is a castled city surrounded by walls from 1,000 years ago that look like castle walls even today. The city hasn't changed at all. So she took her imagery from the world that she knew. And so as you enter the second mansion, what you can image is that you are drawing ever more deeply into yourself and away from the outside world. Perhaps the image of a deeper tunnel, pulling yourself inward, inward, inward into a deeper door, the door to the first mansion. And then you walk more deeply into a thicker, more sacred door that you open and you find yet a more exquisite space. Your deeper mansion, the second one. Teresa called the second mansion a place where a person developed a need for soul companionship. What Teresa realized was that at some point, the person making a journey toward God would require soul companions, not to discuss wounds, not to go back to their childhood and bang on the floor with pillows and Kleenex weeping. Why wasn't my childhood perfect? Who hurt me and why, God, why? Thank God they were past that. Rather, she knew that the journey of illumination, the journey of becoming a vessel strong enough to become a container of God, would require someone else who knew how intense that journey was. So the second mansion is about developing discernment, developing skills of the interior self, finding soul companionship, and going into the maturity of whether you have what it takes to make a soul commitment to your journey toward God, or whether it is a mental curiosity, like so much is within the contemporary spiritual life. It's essential to understand at this point, what is illumination? What does it mean to be illuminated, to enter into the experience of illumination? What does that mean? If you think about the phenomenon of being called as a mystic without a monastery, you are being called to become illuminated, to become a container of light. For what? What is that? Illumination is the journey of being filled with divine light. Now, I need to spell that out in the small details, to do what Teresa would call, see God in the details of your life. And this is a process that becomes engaged in micro stages in the second mansion, not in the first. The first is this hardcore work, but make no mistake, your second mansion is, in a sense, more rigorous, or rigorous in a different way. In the first mansion, you're battling as if you are in the castle trying to shut out the outside world. And I want you to imagine yourself finally leaning against that castle gate saying, okay, all right, I'm in now. I finally dealt with all that power, all my power issues. I'm in. I got them. I got a lot of reptiles. All right, fine. I have power issues. I have chaos. I know I can't deal with that. Now what do you want? Now I want you to imagine that you have to sit down and consider, if you became a vessel of light, as light came through you, you would begin the extraordinary journey toward God, which is a journey of perception, a journey of the capacity to perceive life through the lens of God. What does that mean? It means that you are called to perceive every human being through divinity. It means that you are called to ascend to truth and to live that. Now, that sounds like a theory, but let me spell this out for you. I was doing a lecture in England, and I was talking to a group of people, and I said, here's an exercise. I want you to list what your inner theology is. How many of you have ever taken the time to actually articulate what your theology is? Not just like in theory, but actually in micro detail. And then, once you list, I accept that the divine principles that I have agreed to live, to honor, that I animate through the power and force and voice of my soul are that forgiveness is a law, not an option for me, but a law. A law. Now, list your exceptions and why you do that. List them. Because if on the journey of illumination you have more exceptions to your rules than practice, you need to deal with that. You need to deal with that. And if you lean on your wounds, you need to deal with one thing, and it's called self-righteous vengeance. Don't call it woundedness. Call it what it is. Self-righteous vengeance. Now, to be illuminated means that light is given to you to see clearly, to see yourself clearly, so that you can see long range and others. Now, someone said to me in this group, God bless this person, he said, you know what, I don't want to see that much, and I'll tell you why. I'm not ready to live that forgiving a life. I don't want to be the one always called to forgive while everybody else is not. I'm not that generous, and I don't want to have that giving a heart. I don't always want to be the one who has to be more conscious and more understanding, because I'm the one who understands that compassion is the greater force than vengeance. I don't want to be the one who's given insight into the healing power of compassion, so that I'm the one always called to turn the other cheek, so to speak. I don't want to be that person, while everybody else gets to be angry, because they really don't get the power of that yet. This is illumination. Illumination is not about getting to see your life path so that you don't have any problems anymore. Illumination is going to make your life more problem-filled, but not for personal reasons. Not for personal reasons. So that others may be served. In the second mansion, you begin to grow intuitively, not psychically, in the sense of considering psychic power. It is intuitive instincts that you should look to with great respect, because your intuitive instincts are the beginnings of your contact with organic divinity, the God within your bones, within your loins, within your fiber, the survival divinity within you. And you begin to feel those rumblings stronger and stronger within you in this second mansion. And as you do, as this sensitivity develops, you begin to develop a need for companions, because one of the sensitivities that begins to develop or can develop in you is an intuitive expansion in your field, which can make you more sensitized to the physical world around you. Teresa was aware of this, by the way. She was very aware that as you entered into deeper inner work, it expanded your perceptual field. It expanded your inner wiring. It expanded your sensitivities. And the way I would explain it is that all life has energy fields. And if we looked at it through the law of oneness, it's you becoming attuned to the animation of that law of oneness. As if that law of oneness was melting from theory into experience for you. As if someone took that law as a piece of ice, and your process of inner illumination was beginning to allow you to become strong enough so that you could be a vessel who could channel, work with the grace of that law. The ice melts. It gradually flows. Ice eventually melts, flows through you like water, and is absorbed into your soul like steam. And you are one with it. That is the full process of illumination. You need soul companions because you need to be able to say to someone, I've had an experience of oneness with nature. And you need to stop saying, I thought I was going crazy. You need to never say that again. If you think you are going crazy, get out and go peel potatoes because you cannot handle the journey. If this is the level of your sanity, then don't go there because you're not going crazy. Instead, the object is learn the journey. Instead of celebrating all that you don't know, so that the best you can do is scream about your insanity, learn the journey. This is the journey. As you open, you perceive what others cannot see. And if you cannot handle the consequential isolation that comes from having singular thoughts, singular vision, if you are still someone who longs to be understood, longs for recognition, then get to the kitchen because you can't handle it. This is the maturation and refinement that you must complete in the first mansion. This is where humbleness comes in, where you get past the need for recognition for everything that you do and who you are, so that you can get to the stage where you can exist in interior isolation. And still, Teresa recognized, but you do need to be understood. And you do need companions along the way. No one should stand on this earth alone. That is not the way this journey is meant to be lived. You do need companions, and I see people starving for companions of the soul. True companions of illumination, where we gather together not to beat on the floor about our endless wounds and waste your life in cemeteries with the dead, but rather to sit together in circles of power and say, give me the best of what you've got. I need to create something. Illuminate my journey with me. Where you can come and say, you know what? I've been instructed. I can feel the instruction. I need to take a new direction in my life, and let's pray together. Help me with my guidance. And then have a banquet. Go celebrate what there is to eat on this earth, how our earth feeds us, and go watch a movie. Be illuminaries to each other. Share in the beauty of sacred poetry. Read, share. How does it nurture your soul? Do not nurture each other's wounds. You do nothing but gather together, take out knives, and scrape each other's blood sores. And you think that helps? Stop it. You get together and you give each other light. You say, you know what I see in you? I see such potential. And I'll tell you what I do as your beloved soul companion. I will not let you fall. And if I see you slipping into that darkness, I'm going to give you the best of what I have as a channel for grace. I will bring light to you. Even if it is only prayer at a distance, what you can count on is you look at that clock and every day you see noon, you know I am in prayer for you. That is what you do. Gather together and do what Teresa instructed her beloved nuns to do. See God in the details of your life. This was a command. This was essential. To see God in the details. To get over complaining. You cannot progress into your soul if your spiritual practice is, "Dear God, my life isn't good enough yet. But if these things could happen, if I could have this, then all would be well." Because you know what? It wouldn't. If you have that streak in you, you'd get this and it still wouldn't be enough. Because you're just a not enougher. And that's your archetype. You're an empty can with no bottom. And that's just who you are. You'd find something else to want, and that would never be good enough either. You'd find someone else to be jealous of. So in this mansion, you deal with that, your jealousy, your micro reptiles. You deal with your envy. You deal with your why nothing is enough. And then you develop the practice of God in the details. Now, Teresa said God will use anything to get through to you. Anyone's conversation, God may be speaking through that person and you never know it. So from now on, you're stuck because you have to look at the person opposite you and think, is this a message or isn't it? So what are you going to do? You have no option now but to treat that person with the utmost divine respect. And sometimes it is brutal, but this is illumination. To illuminate, to bring light to the moment. This is a mystic in the field. This is true mystical activism. You know, I remember one time when I was in I was getting all made up for a TV show. And the girl that was doing my makeup was an anorexic. And she was very nervous and shaky and fragile. And you could see that her disorder had aged her by 10 years, maybe 20. She had dark circles under her eyes and she was just worn to a frazzle. And in walked someone, maybe it was a producer, but this person had the authority. And this makeup woman was obviously someone who wasn't on staff. And you could see the exchange between them was one of power to powerlessness, which only made this woman twice as insecure, and she began to get even more fragile. And in that moment, the electricity was going right through me, but it didn't matter. But in that moment, I could see her bracing herself to say something that she would regret. I could see it coming, because how many times do I see myself in that? I thought, oh, well, I know that expression. You know, what do you think? This is new, right? And I leaned over and I grabbed her arm. Now, mind you, I was fully aware I was crossing over the boundaries of intimacy because I had not known her at all to do something that was quite familial. This was a stranger. So when I did that and I went, shh. And I shook my head and I said, shh, like made the motion. No. She looked at me, but in my whole soul, I held the prayer, "Dear God, fill her with grace. She's so frightened." And it just, I could see it. I could see grace. But I always know grace floods her, not because I asked, but because of her. Because of her. It just is, "Dear God, flood her." And I knew she was flooded. And I could see everything just change in her countenance. And then I said, "You know, this may not be the best place for you. It's none of my business. But boom, out came a reading. I was there because I wrote Sacred Contracts. She had no idea about my other life. So I did a reading on her. And then I left. But I could see in that moment to shine light. Now, the other option would be, what a horrible person, and feed that end. To fuel a fire, which would have destroyed her and this very fragile form, and maybe pushed her over the edge. And it's more ruthless. It feels so much more powerful to destroy a person than to do something soft and grace-filled and then evaporate. Silently evaporate. That is grace in action. That is mystical activism. Channel grace, pull away. That is the practice of illumination. The practice of maintaining light is about prayer, self-reflection. I pray through let me not do harm and just keep going. Going into the castle. Going into the practice, always the practice of humility. Remember always that this is about practice and not perfection. Finally, you must face your commitment to God. What Teresa says is that the second mansion brings you to a place where you have to consider whether or not you have the capacity to make a true commitment to the fullness of the journey. And what that means is a daily practice, not an occasional one, but a true daily practice. What would that involve? Your commitment to a practice, a devotion. And that is a word you don't hear. Devotion. To be devoted to a prayer life. And just the thought of that prayer life sounds so monastic. But you know what it is? That's exactly what it is. You would have a form of an interior monastic life where you are devoted to prayer, to your prayer life. Why? Because you need to be devoted to your soul. And the journey of pulling away from the outside world, not because you're leaving the outside world. I need to emphasize that. You need to build the stamina to stay in the outside world while having a rich life that has interior vision of great light. And if you don't think that requires stamina, you better think again. This is going to be the most rigorous life you have ever led, because you will not have the option anymore of saying, I can't follow this guidance because I'm afraid. You can't do that anymore. Your fears no longer can have authority over you. You can say, I am afraid. You can acknowledge that, but it can't stop you anymore. You can say, I am still wounded, but I cannot be stopped. I am still courageous. You can still be very much engaged in your healing, but you cannot declare your illness has rendered you helpless. No more. It's over with. You accept a devotion to your own empowerment at the soul level with a prayer life as your focus, because you must nurture yourself. You have to cling to words of inspiration and divine guidance that lift you out and remind you at all times, with you, Lord, all things are possible. With you, Lord, all things are possible. I'm just going to follow the instruction, and I will surrender and let go of the outcome. It is not in my hands. It is not in my hands. I trust, I know the whole world is full of miracles when you are present and you are in the details. I'm going to see the details no matter what it is, whether the details are an accident on my street or the beautiful garden that stands in front of me. I will not deny your presence anywhere. I am tired of saying this part of my life has you and this part doesn't. My denial of your presence is over with. God in the details is my devotion. Self-reflection is my practice. I will hold myself not responsible, but accountable. And it's not enough to say, I'm responsible for that, and do nothing else. Always action will follow my acknowledgement. And therefore, I'm going to act this way next. And this is not about anything but the practice of inner compassion. This is true inner love. The true mystic prepares to be a servant to others. And in the process of that is ultimate service of the self. You can feel that the subject matter of the second mansion has then this theme of taking you into the self through the lens of introspection in a much more interior way than the first mansion. Let's take a look at the interior in your soul, at who you are as a soul companion. People are longing to meet people they can relate to at a level that is beyond wounds, beyond confusion. I know that I have seen the starvation in people's faces. They are looking to meet people through whom they can share the journey of not fear, but empowerment. It's very difficult for people to empower each other. They're afraid of that. They're afraid that if they empower another person, there goes theirs. It's very difficult. You have to be honed to become a soul companion. You have to get the selfishness knocked out of you. It doesn't come naturally sometimes. And yet, part of the journey of illumination is very much to look within to see how much can I give? And can I give unconditionally? You don't know that. You may think you can, but you don't know that. So let's enter the corridor of soul companions. Let's go down that corridor. So let's take a deep breath. I want you to imagine that you are walking down a corridor. The floor is polished wood, and you can hear it creaking. You can hear it. And the walls are a more refined stone now. Beautiful stonework. You're in the second mansion, and there are candles lighting the hallway. And it has a very different feel. It's a more intimate hallway. And on the right, there's a door, and it's a soft, beautiful, beautiful sage green door. I want you to open it up, walk in there, and in the room, there's a fireplace. And it's brilliantly, brilliantly glowing. There's a gorgeous, comfortable chair there. I want you to go sit down. And it's as if the room has been waiting for you a long, long time. And get very cozy there, and there's a letter. And the letter, as always, is the key to the dialogue between you and your soul. A dialogue of revelation. So focus yourself through your solar plexus. Go deep into your interior. Go down deep, deep into your interior. Take a breath and focus. You're not in your mind. Deep in your interior. You can feel yourself dropping way down to your gut. And you open the letter and it reads, "What quality of soul companion am I? What quality of soul companion am I capable of becoming? I don't know that. What quality of soul companion could I become if I journeyed deeply into my soul? I don't know. But I have to look at what would prevent me from being a truly, truly giving person to another person." Illumination is so very attractive. It is so beautiful to think that I could share the most of what I have to give to others. But let me think of someone in my life right now that I find very, very irritating, very difficult. And now I have to pray to illuminate them. Not on my behalf. Not on my behalf. But on theirs. I have to give them the best of what I could offer. Through the depth of my grace. Through everything I've been trained. And educated in my spiritual life to be, I have to use on their behalf without giving myself excuses. I am training to be this person. And I will hold this person in front of me right now. And I will pray, I am a channel for grace, and I am asking for light to illuminate my relationship with this person. Not for my sake, not selfishly, but if I am being selfish, let me see that. All I want to see is the goodness in this person. That's it. I want to see you, God, in this person. Not why this person hurt me. Not why this person's in my life. I do not want to satisfy my own needs with this illumination. I want to see only what is good about this person. Not so that I can release them and get on with my life. Because maybe this person's supposed to be in my life. I simply want to illuminate and practice illumination. And I will hold them now, and I ask you for the grace to see this person in light. This is the practice of illumination. Hold this person and invoke light. And let your soul reveal any insight to you. Let your soul talk to you. Feel it coming from your interior as if it's emerging from behind your belly. Not from your mind. You are not looking for reasons why, just for light. If you turn to reasons why you have stepped into it, it becomes self-serving. And you are asking, why is this person the way he or she is? And it is now a self-serving question. To say, let me see the beauty. Illuminate you in this person so that I can love. Let me use my light. And now take a deep breath. As you release that image and you bless that person, and you look toward your own capacity to feel the beginning of what it is to be a soul companion, of what it is to use light to serve another person, to use light to see what is beautiful in another person. This is a room to enter into when you must work through the difficulty of another person, of a relationship, of struggles, where you must invoke light to see clearly. But most especially with relationships, where you bring them in and you say, help me illuminate this. Not so I understand, because I don't really need to. If I ask to understand, then I'm asking this relationship to serve me. I'm asking this relationship to work out to serve me if I say, let me see why this person is doing this to me. Instead, when you come in this room, your role is to simply say, let grace flow through me so that I can shine light to the best of my ability on what is beautiful about this person. And that grace melts through all negativity. That is divine truth, and that is what you learn in this room. Take a deep breath and feel. Amen. Continuing. This is a beautiful corridor. The corridor of illumination. And you're going to continue walking down the corridor. And on your left is a lovely wooden door. I want you to open it up and you walk into a room that is all soft corners. All soft corners. It feels totally round in this room. And there's a soft cornered chair. All round and soft. Just lovely. Now I want you to sit in this chair and feel yourself very, very soothing. You get the feeling in here that you're going to have to pursue a very deep question. You're aware that this is a room between you and your soul. And there's your letter. And your soul says, as you come to know me, you will begin to feel a great deal of loneliness. Not because you're going to be taken away from everything you know deliberately, but because I need you to only know my voice. And so in order to only know my voice, I need you to come toward me with no distractions. You already know this, and it scares you. It scares you very much, and you fear loneliness. And in this room, I want you to talk to me about your loneliness and how that will sometimes make you want to stop your interior journey toward me. This is the room to come to. The soul says to you in this letter, when the loneliness of the journey becomes so overwhelming that you feel life has abandoned you, when you feel as if the dark night of the soul has consumed you, this is your room, but this is part of illumination. Loneliness, the feeling that you are alone, is essential in the second mansion. And as you rest in this room for a few minutes, rest in the saturation of being alone. Don't run from it. Fall in love with it. Fall in love with the tranquility of aloneness within your soul. Not the aloneness of abandonment, but the aloneness of divine companionship. Fall in love with this feeling. Memorize this feeling. Whenever the feeling, the sensation, a circumstance in life frightens you, come into this room. Come into this room, close the door, and wrap yourself up in this room and remind yourself, this is sacred aloneness. This is sacred space that I'm in. I am not alone. I have never been alone, but I have never, ever known such deep peace. This is the beginning of true tranquility. And with that deep thought, feel the grace of Amen. Continuing down this hall, there's a room to your right, and the door is all sixes and sevens. It has five corners. Walk in there. And this is a very confused little room, and you think, I don't know that I want to be in here. You have to be in there. This is the room to go into every time you have to deal with illuminating reasons why you are a difficult person. Shining light on your own interior capacities to be a difficult person, stubborn, jealous, power plays, dishonesty, breaking your word, gossip, your behind-the-scenes power habits. This is this room. There are conflicts and difficulties in every moment in life. This is your room of processing, of illuminating your participation. The sign over this door reads, "Leave blame at the door." You may never blame another person for your actions again. For why you do what you do. You are an adult. You cannot blame your childhood. You cannot blame another person. From this moment on, you have to accept full authority. Authority. Not responsibility alone, not accountability, but authority for the power of your life. Step into the authority of who you are. Picture Francis of Assisi or Buddha blaming his parents for who he is. The very notion is too preposterous. That stops now. You come into this room and it's over. This is a room where you play hardball with yourself. And you never again look for why someone did something to you. It's over. Your journey is to illuminate why you respond the way you do. And I will give you clues as to the full spectrum of response. This is not just about discovering your shadow. It is about discovering why you deny your light. Why you deny your light. Why do I not honor my creativity? Why? Why do I deny that I am truly a very gifted healer? Why do I do that? Why do I deny that I have great insights? And when someone asks for my insights, why do I say nothing? Because I'm so afraid of being rejected. You come in here and you owe God an explanation and you owe yourself one. And you come in here and say, "You have given me great gifts and I'm not using them. And I owe you an explanation." And you can't blame another person for why you are not using the grace in your soul. But you owe yourself that. This is a room where you come in not just to look at your shadow, but why you are not using your light. Your light. You must come to terms with your light or you cannot accept illumination. Illumination is light. Fall in love with your light. And every time you are in this room, every single time, you must leave naming a gift of your light that you promise yourself you will release as you leave this room. And you will release it. And you release it by committing it to conscious action. Not by thinking about it. Not by wishing it. Not by talking about it. But committing it to action in this world. You are a mystical activist. Without action, you have not fulfilled your word. You must put it into action. Without action, you have done nothing. So now before you leave this room, you look for a piece of your light that you take with you to illuminate your world. And that illuminates the world of others. Maybe it's a promise to share the goodness you see in someone else next time you see it. Yes, I will tell them that I think they're special. Yes, I will. Next time, I will. That's enough. That is a good enough promise. Because you can see their light. No one else can. You owe them that. That could save their life. That could be the one beam of light that determines whether or not that person decides to live. Remember that. Now take a deep breath. Remember, you are a channel for grace. Feel the force of Amen as you leave this room. We are now walking into the last room in your second mansion. This is the chapel, the sacred space of your second mansion. And as you open the double doors and you walk in, you see a place prepared for you to sit and pray. There's a letter waiting for you. Open it up. The question this time is not from your soul, but from the divine. The question reads simply, are you prepared for commitment? A simple question. Are you prepared for the journey? This is a question you must take deeply into your soul. Are you prepared for the journey? Knowing that the journey is going to shred you. It's going to break you. It's going to free you into bliss. It's going to empower you, not bring you power. But you come to know what is power. It will lead you into spiritual divine service. Your soul belongs to humanity, not to you. Your soul is a vessel of grace, a vessel of service, an instrument that belongs to God, not to you. To release it to such service is to release yourself to the cosmos. And you need to worry what would become of you on this earth? God never, ever misuses the instruments of his choice. You become chosen for a sacred and unusual life, an extraordinary life where you can expect miracles and also expect situations that require them. Sit with God and deeply, deeply take the question into the soul. Are you ready for the journey? And as you stay in this chapel, follow the exit prayer from the second mansion. I am a channel for grace. As I leave the second mansion, I remain within the field of grace of the castle, protected in this earth. Grace surrounds me at all times. I enter my life under the blessing of God, and I remain open to guidance as it flows into my soul. I am a channel for grace.